You're listening to DGTM News, recorded for Tuesday, January the 8th, 2013. You're listening to the Tech Only Hacker Public Radio Edition. To get the full podcast, including political commentary and other controversial topics, please visit www.talkgeektome.us. Here are the vital statistics for this program. Your feedback matters to me. Please send your comments to dg@deepgeek.us. The webpage for this program is at www.talkgeektome.us. You can subscribe to me on Identica as the username DeepGeek, or you could follow me on Twitter. My username there is DGTGTM, as in Deep Geek. Talk Geek to Me.
This is Dan Washko, and now the Tech Roundup. From TorrentFreak.com by Enigmax, dated December 22, 2012. U.S. and Russia announce online piracy crackdown agreement. Quote Enigmax, the United States and Russia have announced an agreement to crack down on online piracy. The countries have agreed to disrupt sites that facilitate infringement and take action against their operators. As a result, uncertain times may lie ahead for many BitTorrent and other file-sharing sites hosted in Russia. The agreement also allows for the improved takedown of infringing content and discussions on allowing Russian right holders to use the United States' six-strike system. For many years, Russia has been viewed as a soft touch on the issue of copyright infringement. Dozens, perhaps hundreds, of allegedly infringing sites operate there with impunity, some due to aspects of Russian law and others simply because authorities have no interest in doing anything about them. However, yesterday, December 21st, 2012, came an announcement from United States Trade Representative Ron Kirk, which suggests that for the U.S., things are moving more quickly towards a favorable situation. Kirk said that the United States and Russian Federation have reached agreement on an intellectual property rights action plan aimed at improving copyright protection and enforcement online. Quote Kirk, strong IPR protection and enforcement are vital to promoting innovation and creativity by securing the rights of innovators and creative community, attracting high technology investment, and fostering the jobs necessary for long-term sustainable growth. End quote. According to the USTR, in addition to conducting enforcement actions against unauthorized camcordering, agreement has been reached to disrupt the functioning of sites that, quote, facilitate criminal copyright infringement, end quote. In addition to disruption, whatever form that may take, Russia has reportedly agreed to take action against the creators and operators of sites through which copyright infringement is committed. The USTR also reports that Russian authorities have agreed to conduct meaningful consultations with rights holders to take action against high-priority websites. In short, the sites on that list will probably be the ones submitted to the USTR by the RIAA and MPAA for the Notorious Markets report. The vast majority of the report is targeted at larger entities that might be engaged in or connected to online piracy, but the USTR appears to have dangled a carrot that would enable Russian companies to target U.S. citizens in a limited way. End quote of the article. From EFF.org by Trevor Tim, dated December 19, 2012. Government attorneys agree with EFF. New counterism database rules threaten privacy of every American. Last week, the Wall Street Journal reported on how a little-known government agency, the National Counterterrorism Center, NCTC, got the keys to government database full of detailed personal information of millions of innocent Americans. Using the Freedom of Information Act and interviews with officials, the journal obtained emails and other information detailing how the massive new spying program, which the Attorney General signed off on in March, was approved by White House in secret over strenuous objections from government privacy lawyers. As EFF first warned months ago, despite the terrorism justification, the new rules affect every single American, the journal explained. Now NCTC can copy entire government databases, flight records, casino employee lists, the names of Americans hosting foreign exchange students, and many others. The agency has new authority to keep data about innocent U.S. citizens for up to 5 years and to analyze it for suspicious patterns of behavior. Previously, both were prohibited. Data about Americans, quote, reasonably being believed to constitute terrorism information, end quote, may be permanently retained. Journalist Marcy Wheeler summed of the new guidelines up nicely in March, saying, quote, "So, the data the government keeps to track our travel, our taxes, our benefits, our identity, it just got transformed from bureaucratic data into national security intelligence," end quote. Ironically, this civil liberties debacle apparently was a response to the attempted 2009 Christmas underwear bombing by Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. As the ACLU observed, however, Abdulmutallab wasn't a U.S. citizen, and collecting information on him wasn't a problem. Instead, his own father had identified him to the U.S. government as a potential terrorist. In short, an attack by a known foreign terror suspect was used to justify changes to rules about collecting information on U.S. citizens. The Privacy Act is supposed to limit the ability of the U.S. government to collect and maintain detailed data about ordinary citizens. Among other restrictions, it prohibits agencies from maintaining personal information unless it is, quote, relevant and necessary, end quote, for a specific purpose. But thanks to a loophole in the law, federal agencies can issue public notices to the Federal Register and attempt to skirt those rules entirely, thereby opening the door to arbitrary and unnecessary data collection. According to the journal's investigation, the debate over the program's potential privacy violation sparked a, quote, heated, end quote, testy debate in the Justice Department, Department of Homeland Security, and the White House. A DHS lawyer complained via email that the advocates of the program were, quote, complete non-sequiturs, end quote, non-responsive, end quote, examples, ultimately privacy lost. Of course, it's unclear whether the data mining operation even works. At the Department of Justice, Chief Privacy Officer Nancy Libin raised concerns about whether the guidelines could unfairly target innocent people. These people said, "Some researchers suggest that, statistically speaking, there are too few terror attacks for predictive patterns to emerge. The risk, then, is that innocent behavior gets misunderstood. Say, a man buying chemicals for a child science fair, and a timer first, the sprinkler, sets off false alarms." Just like EFF did in March, the journal compared the new NCTC program to the notorious Total Information Awareness surveillance program proposed by Admiral John Poindexter in 2002. Congress was so alarmed by the potential invasion to innocent Americans' privacy that they defunded it in 2003. What the journal did not mention, however, is that even the NCTC's best-known database, Terrorist Identities Data Mart Environment, or TIDE, is already fraught with problems. TIDE contains more than 500,000 identities suspected of terror links, explained the journal. Quote, TIDE files are important because they are used by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to compile terrorist watch lists, end quote. But according to an unusually blunt Senate investigation of so-called, quote, fusion centers, released last month, the TIDE database is also full of information of innocent people that have nothing to do with terrorism. The report gave examples of a TIDE profile of a person whom the FBI had already cleared of any connection to terrorism, a TIDE profile of a 2-year-old boy, and even a TIDE profile of Ford Motor Company. Indeed, the data mining expansion seems like a horrible and self-fulfilling prophecy. As the journal noted, the underwear bomber incident led President Obama to order agencies to send all their leaders to NCTC and to order NCTC to pursue thoroughly and exhaustively terrorism threat threads. Predictably, NCTC was flooded with terror tips, creating a huge backlog that NCTC couldn't process within the original time limits. NCTC then predictably sought to retain more data longer. Congress needs to stop this vicious cycle. It should investigate the new NCTC guidelines and the government's overall data collection and data mining practices, and it should take a look at closing loopholes in the Privacy Act, too. From TechDirt.com by Mike Masnick, dated December 28, 2012. Apparently, Congress isn't actually interested in requiring a warrant for law enforcement to read your email. From the It Was All a Charade Department. Yes, we've already covered the rejection of key amendments in the FISA Amendment Act renewal, but that wasn't the only case of Congress ignoring the public's privacy concerns as they close out this session. Back in September, we noted that Senator Patrick Leahy, who had been working on much-needed reforms for ECPA, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, much as requiring law enforcement get a warrant to read your email, had attached his ECPA reform plan to an update of the Video Privacy Protection Act, VPPA. While I know some privacy folks were worried about this update to the VPPA, I don't have much of a problem with it. The original VPPA, written as a quick response to a video store revealing Robert Bork's somewhat boring video rental history during his Supreme Court nomination hearing, did seem a bit limiting, especially for online video sites such as Netflix that wanted to add some useful social features. However, it was the ECPA reform part that was more important. Attaching ECPA reform to VPPA reform didn't make some privacy folks happy, but they seemed willing to go along with the VPPA changes if it really meant that we get a warrant requirements for emails and other digital messages. There were some attempts to water down that ECPA reform at the end of last month, but the Senate Judiciary Committee kept the warrant requirement in there and rejected various attempts to weaken the bill. As we noted, however, it still was a long way from becoming law, given the need to pass a full Senate vote and to have a companion House bill to make the rounds. We assumed that there would be no movement until next year and the new Congress. But late last week, the House rubber-stamped the VPPA update, and the Senate almost immediately signed off on the House's version, which the President is expected to sign any moment now. In case you missed it, that means the ECPA reforms, which were supposed to be bundled with the VPPA to make the whole thing palatable, got dropped entirely, and now we get the VPPA reforms and no ECPA reform at all. Neat trick. Bundle two things to get support, and then at the last minute, drop one part and rush through the other. From TorrentFreak.com by Ernesto, dated January 3rd, 2013. Mega upload. U.S. deliberately misled the court with unlawful search warrants. When the U.S. government applied for the search warrants against Mega Upload last year, it told the court that they had warned Mega Upload in 2010 that it was hosting infringing files. Through its hosting company, Mega Upload was informed about a criminal search warrant in an unrelated case where the government requested information on 39 infringing files stored by the file hosting service. At the time, Mega Upload cooperated with this request and handed over the details on the uploaders. The files were kept online as Mega Upload was instructed not to touch any of the evidence. However, a year later, this inaction is being used by the U.S. government to claim that Mega Upload was negligent, leaving out much of the context. As of November 18, 2011, 36 of the 39 infringing copies of the copyrighted motion pictures were still being stored on servers controlled by the Mega Conspiracy, the government claimed in the Mega Upload search warrants. This course of action is misleading, according to Mega Upload's legal team. Nowhere did the government tell this court that Mega Upload had done exactly what the government had asked it to do, execute a search warrant without alerting the ostensible targets to the existence of an investigation, Mega Upload's lawyers write. The government's contention to this court that Mega Upload's preservation of the status quo was evidence of criminal intent is false and deliberately so, they add. By failing to mention that the files were not removed because the authorities specifically requested this, the government deliberately misled the court, Mega Upload says. The lawyers argue that this is not only troubling by itself, but also fits into a wider picture of misconduct that was revealed in New Zealand court proceedings. It is clear from the unsealed warrants that the government withheld critical information from its supporting affidavits. That withholding calls into grave question the legality of any and all seizures effected pursuant to those warrants. The withholding is all the more worrisome considering the identified pattern of governmental misconduct plaguing the proceedings in New Zealand, the legal team writes. Mega Upload therefore asks for these issues to be addressed in an upcoming hearing. Kim.com told Torrent Freak that he is furious about the U.S. government's actions which ruined his business. Quote Kim.com, a legitimate business destroyed, 220 jobs destroyed, all assets frozen without a hearing, millions of users without access to the legitimate files, anti-terror forces to arrest nonviolent nerds, spy agencies to surveil our communications illegally, the White House, a prime minister, two governments abusing our rights. To read this filing and the rest of the article, please see the link in the show notes. From EFF.org by Hannah Thackeray, dated December 21, 2012. Vermont Supreme Court allows limits to government computer search power. A new and important decision by the Vermont Supreme Court could go a long way to safeguard privacy by ensuring police computer searches remain narrow. EFF, together with the ACLU and ACLU of Vermont, filed an amicus brief in the case, which empowered courts that issue warrants to include specific instructions on how the police can conduct a search so they remain narrow and particular. This case started as part of an identity theft investigation where police in Burlington, Vermont, applied for a search warrant to seize and search a number of computers, cell phones, and other electronic devices in a house. Noting the ease with which electronic data can travel between electronic devices, as well as the fact that evidence could be stored anywhere on the computer, investigators submitted an extraordinarily overbroad search warrant application, including requests to search other electronic devices found in the house, even if its owners wasn't suspected of committing a crime. They also asked for the ability to search the entire contents of all the computers and devices they seized. But the Fourth Amendment requires searches to be reasonable. That obviously means the police need a search warrant to search a place. It also means that their search must be limited or particular so that the search only intrudes into a private space where the thing the police want is most likely to be found. But how does that work in the digital age, where computers and other electronic devices store vast amounts of our private and sensitive information in any number of places? The judge, grappling with the Fourth Amendment implications, issued the search warrant but imposed limits on how the government could execute the search. The court relied heavily on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals 2010 decision in United States v. Comprehensive Drug Testing Incorporated, which provided law enforcement with the suggested guidelines designed to protect privacy during computer searches. Unhappy with these limitations, the government filed a petition for extraordinary relief in the Vermont Supreme Court, asking that the original broad warrant officer's request be granted. In last Friday's decision, the Vermont Supreme Court understood the privacy implications at issue and ruled that the Fourth Amendment allows a judge to include instructions in a search warrant to ensure an electronic search remains narrow and particular. The court approved the three different limitations judges can place on the government as part of a computer search that have important ramifications for other forms of electronic seizures. First, searches can be performed by third parties or police personnel segregated from the main investigators who segregate irrelevant information prior to disclosure. Second, judges can order investigators to focus search techniques while precluding use of specialized search tools without prior judicial authorization. And third, investigators are limited in data that they can copy. Non-responsive data should be destroyed and devices returned. Judges control search warrants, not the government. The court noted that warrant applications aren't submitted to judges on a take-it-or-leave-it basis, but oftentimes it seems that this is precisely what the government wants: wide-ranging authorization into electronic evidence with minimal oversight and little particularity. And when prosecutors don't get their way, their default is to argue that the judges are little more than rubber stamps, permitted to do nothing more than approve or deny government requests. Thankfully, the Vermont Supreme Court stood up to the government and told them they couldn't have whatever they wanted. Other courts are starting to be more vocal, too, about the government's efforts to intrude into the private lives of Americans. We need more courts to think about the implications of their decisions and craft limits on electronic surveillance so they can fulfill their traditional role as a check against government overreach. To read more details about the three limitations, follow the article link in the show notes.
Other headlines in the news. To read these stories, follow the links in the show notes. German privacy regulator orders Facebook to end its real name policy. List of groups haunted by websites with anti-pseudonym policy.
Staff and produced by the Talk Geek to Me news team, editorial selection by Deep Geek. Views of the story authors reflect their own opinions and not necessarily those of TGTM News. News from TechDirt.com, TheStand.org, and HavanaTimes.org used under arranged permission. News from TorrentFreak.com and EFF.org used under permission of the Creative Commons by Attribution License. News from WLCentral.org and DemocracyNow.org used under permission of the Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. New sources retain their respective copyrights. Thank you very much. This has been Dan Washko. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Geek to Me. Here are the vital statistics for this program. Your feedback matters to me. Please send your comments to dg@deepgeek.us. The webpage for this program is at www.talkgeektome.us. You can subscribe to me on Identica as the username DeepGeek, or you could follow me on Twitter. My username there is DGTGTM, as in Deep Geek Talk Geek to Me.
This episode of Talk Geek to Me is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 Unported license. This license allows commercial reuse of the work, as well as allowing you to modify the work, so long as you share alike the same rights you have received under this license.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Geek to Me.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.